Hey, I know you're probably driving or running or cleaning the house or doing something else when you're listening to this, but look, if you're a B2B marketer and you need to start generating revenue from your marketing, then you have to check out our 12-week program, the B2B Incubator. It's built for small, in-house B2B marketing teams with limited time and budget. We give you the strategy, the templates, and the tools to start driving revenue, not just leads. So if you're ready to act on all the advice Kevin and I give you, next time you take that first sip of coffee in the morning, make sure you head to the B2B Incubator and apply now. There's only 10 spots available per cohort, with our next one launching at the end of May 2024. Remember, the B2B Incubator, apply now so you don't miss out. We've had B2B marketing managers, CMOs, marketers in demand gen roles, content leads, and more all go through this program, and they're currently executing the demand strategies that they've created. Some are now even contributing as much as 80% of the pipeline to their business after working through it. Make sure you check out the b2bincubator.com and apply now to start driving more demand and more revenue for your brand. Okay, let's get on with the show. Hello and welcome to the B2B Playbook podcast. Each week we discuss strategies and tactics to help B2B businesses grow online.
We're your hosts, Kevin and George, a couple of digital marketing professionals. We've waded through the noise and made the mistakes so you don't have to.
The B2B world has changed, and you need to put your customers at the heart of your marketing.
We'll cover how you can use our framework, the 5 B's, to create a brand that customers are ready to buy from, love, and advocate for.
We'll get insights from successful people in the industry and cover the latest trends to keep you on the cutting edge of the B2B world.
If you're interested in B2B marketing strategies and tactics that work, then this podcast is for you.
Subscribe to get the latest from the B2B Playbook first.
Remember, successful B2B marketing starts with the buyer.
Welcome back to the B2B Playbook, listeners, viewers, Kevin. Today we were talking about how you can make a business case for demand generation. It's an episode that's brought about by popular demand. We are deep into season 6 of the show. This is, of course, the show where we show you, listeners, how to generate demand step by step. We gave you our 5 B's framework for demand generation in seasons 1 to 5. We laid it all out there for you to follow step by step. And now we're in the middle of a mini series in season 6, where we're answering a lot of frequently asked questions about demand generation. Kevin, can you give us a super quick overview of our 5 B's framework? What was covered in seasons 1 to 5 before we show our listeners how they can build a business case for demand generation?
The easiest way, listeners, to remember is it's the 5 B's framework. So you start with be ready, then you go to be helpful, be seen, be better, and finally be the best. We really start by deeply understanding customers, then producing helpful content and building relationships of trust with them online through that helpful content. You amplify that content to be seen. And finally, in be better and be the best, you start to optimize that process and start to test advanced strategies and tactics and keep going over that framework to make sure that whatever you're doing is top of the class, it's leading in your industry and your career as well.
Very good. Thank you, Kevin. Okay, as I said, today we are continuing our mini series on demand generation. And the question that we're answering is, how can I make a business case for demand generation at my company? Now, for context, Kevin and I, that many of you are given MQL targets and you're running lead generation plays to meet it. Now, these MQLs are passed on to sales. They're often poorly defined, and there's not really a lot of intent from those leads that you're passing on sales for people to buy from you. Yet, despite it being a very inefficient acquisition process, there is still so much pressure on marketing to deliver these leads to sales. And you need to show that this isn't working if you're going to get off this hamster wheel. And let me tell you, listeners, you need to get off this hamster wheel, because one day, probably mixing analogies here, Kevin, but the chickens are going to come home to roost and people are going to realize that what you're doing isn't sustainable, that marketing is not really helping contribute to pipeline, and the finger's going to get pointed at you. So this episode is really about getting ahead of the problem, showing there is a problem to leadership, that the way they want marketing to run perhaps isn't the best way, and we're going to show you how to do it step by step. Again, we've put a lot of effort into our whiteboard. So if you're listening, make sure you go and check out the episode on YouTube later, because we have some tables and graphs that make understanding this concept and how to do it a fair bit easier. Kev, we're going to kick off with defining what demand generation is, as we have done with every episode so far in this mini series. Listeners, demand generation, our definition of demand generation is it is a go-to-market strategy that builds an intense desire in your dream customer to purchase from you. I've again pulled up the five stages of awareness, which is our favorite content framework that really reflects the buying journey. It's how you take people from being unaware that they even need a solution like yours because they don't even know what the problem is, to being led all the way to the logical conclusion that you are the perfect solution for them. So in this stage, people go from being unaware to problem aware to solution aware to product aware to most aware. And the issue that most marketers face is they really focus on those marketers that are solution aware, product aware, and most aware. That's great. We need to get people who are in market ready to buy right now, but that only accounts for 3 to 5% of the total market. That's why it's so hard for organizations to scale, because you're trying to take more of a limited pie. The market itself probably isn't growing. More and more competition's jumping in, each trying to get a bigger slice of that pie. And again, Kevin mixing analogies, but it's like being in a pool with a limited number of fish and more sharks just keep getting thrown in year on year. So you are going to run out of customers if you only focus on these buyers. Demand generation, Kevin, is all about focusing on the 97% of the market that's unaware and problem aware, building a relationship with them. They're roughly 97% of the market size. And the goal is that once they're ready to buy, they're led to the logical conclusion that you're the best solution for them. So that's what we talk a lot about here at the B2B Playbook, is how do we do that? How do we build relationships with people in a really systematic way? That's demand generation. And that can be hard to get resources for, because often it gets lumped in with brand awareness and people, especially in their early stages, leadership that don't love dedicating dollars and cents to brand awareness. But it's incredibly important if you want your organization to scale. So that's why, Kev, today we are talking about how do you go about actually showing leadership that the status quo is broken and that demand generation is the correct pathway forward.
Well, I think probably the first part of that, George, is actually verifying whether your current strategy, like lead generation, is working or not. If it is, maybe you can stick to it for the time being, but you need to know exactly how much it's working, exactly how far along you are in terms of it becoming not effective and needing to look at demand generation. So the first step in the process of building a business case for demand generation is actually to have a look and evaluate if your current strategy, whether that's lead generation or something else, is actually working. So access the data and evaluate one simple question. Is the revenue from the leads through that lead generation process that you're undertaking, are those leads, the revenue from those leads, more than the cost of getting those leads?
It's a very simple question, Kevin. And at the top line, that's really what this is all about. It's incredibly important, but it's much easier said than done, Kevin, right? How do we evaluate this? Revenue from leads, cost to get leads. That's not a super easy question to answer. Okay, let's tackle it one point at a time, Kevin. We said we need to find out the revenue from the leads and divide that by the cost to get the leads. So we've got to work out both of those things independently. So cost to get leads. What can go into our cost to get leads? There's some pretty obvious costs, Kevin, like advertising costs. So let's say you're getting those leads by running Google Ads or G2 or paid social or any other kind of advertising platform, maybe billboards, whatever it is. That's an advertising cost. That's a line item. You should be able to access that. You should have all of that information. You should know where your money is being spent. Go and find that information. Total that up. That's not the only cost though, Kevin. One thing, Kevin, that people often really also forget is tools and tech. The tools and the technology that you are using to enable, using these platforms to enable your go-to-market strategy, things like your CRM, any intent platforms, whatever it might be, they're also a cost to the business. And so it's important to understand what those costs are as well and include those in your overall cost per lead. We even like to go one step further beyond that, Kevin, and look at marketing headcount. So if you're probably going to hate this, listeners, marketers, we're all getting paid salaries. We're going to justify that too. I think the best way to really win over leadership is try and be as transparent as possible and show that, hey, like we are a cost as well that is on your balance sheet. And that's something that needs to be taken into account when calculating our cost per lead. And one thing even further beyond that, Kevin, is the actual time for sales to service these leads. This is normally a huge cost that is rarely taken into account, but is one of the biggest ones that once included, you realize that what you're doing is not profitable. Because let's say that you're handing over a whole bunch of leads to sales, they're spending their whole day dialing numbers that aren't picking up or dialing numbers and sending emails to people that when they do answer, have no idea what your product is, they're not educated, and they're not really interested in it. It's a huge waste of their time. And often the reaction is to say, hey, marketing, we actually need to get more leads because we've got to find more of those to find the needle in the haystack. But when you take into account sales' time to service those leads, you realize that every single lead you pass across is actually a cost to the business. That's why it's important to get that information too.
So there you go, listeners. That's top level. The first question you should be asking when you look at building a business case for demand generation. You need to show that the lead generation currently isn't profitable for your business or soon won't be, and it's not scalable. At a high level, again, that means working out revenue from leads divided by the cost to get those leads. So how do you then go about getting your revenue number? We suggest that you pick a period of time. Remember that time for sales to service these leads is also an important factor and often a determining one. So the first thing to do is to pick a period of time to measure that performance against. We recommend 6 to 12 months time, depending on your cycle, your pipeline, how long that takes for a particular lead to work through your pipeline. But generally 6 to 12 months is often a good starting point. So in your CRM, pull the amount of closed won revenue that came from leads generated by marketing and adjust that revenue figure if necessary to account for the average lifetime value of a client, and generally look at that 6 to 12 month period and see how that really looks. So George, again, has helpfully put up an example of what that might look like. If you're looking at this particular example case, marketing revenue for the last 6 months, we have 6 deals won in that 6 month period. The average deal size is 3,000. The average lifetime value is 5,000. So the total projected revenue adjusted for lifetime value for those 50 leads is 250,000. So over the lifetime, because you're likely not spending that much more nominal amount to keep them within your business until they hit that lifetime value of 5,000, then we can safely assume that most likely of those 50 deals won, you're probably going to generate $250,000 worth of revenue that has come from marketing in the last 6 months.
All right, folks, quick breather here. In my time in B2B marketing, generally I've come to realize that there are just certain tools that can be an absolute game changer. And that's why I'm really excited to talk about LeadFeeder. It's a tool that helps you cut through the data and turn those website visitors into solid leads and opportunities for your business. LeadFeeder shows you which companies are checking out your site, tracking their behavior, and it integrates all of this with your CRM. And the result is it's basically like a secret weapon for targeted lead engagement, and it really makes it easier for your team to convert website traffic into sales. Head to leadfeeder.com, give it a free demo, and you'll also get a free extended premium trial when you let the rep know that you found out about LeadFeeder through the B2B Playbook podcast. That's leadfeeder.com. Okay, check it out. Back to the show. That's it, Kev. Look, I think you might have misspoken and you said that there were 6 deals won, but in this example, there were 50 deals won and the average deal size was $3,000. But when you extrapolate that against what you expect the average lifetime value to be, we actually found out that it was $5,000. 50 times 5,000, that gets you to $250,000. That's your total projected revenue from marketing for the last 6 months. So that's how we're working out our revenue number. Okay, so we've got that. And now, Kev, we need to find out how much did it cost us to generate $250,000 in revenue. So then we start to look at the marketing related expenses for the last 6 months, some of which we already just ran through. What we recommend is you get data from the same period of time that you analyzed revenue from. You sum the cost of advertising to get these leads. So the amount that you spent on advertising like Google Ads, LinkedIn Ads, social ads, sponsorships, all that kind of stuff. Also add the cost of the tools and the tech that was used. So marketing automation, CRMs, whatever it is. Sum the cost of labor for this period, salaries and contractors involved in marketing. And now take that revenue number and you divide the cost per lead number. So in this example, Kev, we had $100,000 on marketing salaries, $8,000 in tools and tech, $100,000 in advertising spend. And so our total marketing expenses, $208,000. Okay. So actually, Kev, that's not looking so bad, is it? So we said that we were getting $250,000 in revenue. It costs us $208,000 to get $250,000. You would then say that your return on investment is 1.2. That looks pretty healthy, doesn't it, Kev?
Yeah, not too bad at first glance for sure. 1.2 means you're probably making, you know, profit on the work that you're putting in on the marketing side, and you're generating value for the business that it can then reinvest into the business and keep growing. But George, there's a big but here. It's probably not taking into account everything, is it? It's probably not the true ROI in this case.
That's right, Kevin, because we have left out some pretty interesting, important line items from our marketing related expenses. So we accounted for marketing salaries, tools and tech, advertising spend, total marketing expenses. But what we left out, Kevin, was the cost of sales to service these leads. That's a very real cost to the business. And as we said at the opening to this episode, if you are sending sales a whole bunch of leads and they're going to have to try and find a needle in the haystack, like they're dialing tons and tons of numbers or sending tons of emails, and their close rate is very small from lead to close, then there's a good chance, Kevin, that once you add in sales' salary to service these leads, that things don't look quite as crash hot. So when we add in a couple of salespeople's salaries, Kevin, let's say $240,000, that actually takes our total marketing and sales expenses to $448,000. And again, we're showing this in our table on YouTube. So Kevin, now let's rework whether or not we're actually profitable at this point. So we still only have $250,000 in revenue. But now when you add in the cost of sales to this, it actually cost us $448,000 to get $250,000. And that means our return on investment is 0.56, which means that for every dollar you are spending, you're only getting 56 cents back. And so you're actually losing money. And that, Kevin, is why it is so important to calculate how much time it is taking sales to service these leads. Because as you can imagine, if we didn't take that into account, we could have just kept feeding that existing machine. We were at an ROI of 1.2 before, meaning that for every dollar you spent, you got $1.20 back. But when we take into account the cost of sales, that number drops right down. And that ROI is probably only going to get worse and worse. It's not going to get better. So do your homework, make the investigation. Talk to the CFO if you have to try and work this out, because it's incredibly important if you're going to scale properly as a business.
And as we said earlier, listeners, in the episode, the earlier you find out what your true ROI is, the better it is, because then you have potentially more time and probably a higher ROI at that point to then implement that demand generation strategy, so that you don't actually hit this point where you're already making less money than you're actually spending. And believe me, listeners, if you show them that the ROI, the true ROI is 0.56 per dollar spent, you get 56 cents back. I'm pretty sure the senior leaders in your business, the founders, whoever you're reporting these numbers to, they're going to be pretty interested in what you have to say next to try and turn that around.
That's right, Kevin. They're going to be very, very interested. And before we get to that next step of what you're going to say to leadership, I want to take this one step further, Kevin. And we want to look at doing what's called a split the funnel analysis. And what this does, it's really an analysis that separates leads by where they converted in the funnel, Kevin. So you can use it to analyze how many opportunities and customers were produced by your lead gen campaigns compared to high intent forms. So you'll probably notice that whether a lead came to you via an ebook download versus an inbound demo request, you'll probably notice that the quality of those leads is extremely different. The inbound demo requests typically are a much better educated, they're much more ready to buy, versus the ebook downloads who really just exchanged their email for a piece of information that they found somewhat interesting in the moment. And it doesn't necessarily mean that there's any real intent for them to buy. So the goal in this exercise, Kevin, is to get all these different points of conversion, i.e. where someone actually becomes a lead, and show that there's a real difference in pipeline based on where they came in. And the goal is, as we said, is to really try and split out that, hey, like marketing isn't just one thing. We have these high intent conversion points and these low intent conversion points, and each of those are driven by certain activities. And what we want to do is we want to show that the low intent ones, if the data shows this, that they're not the profitable ones, but they're where the budget is being spent. And let's keep carving some of the budget out of those low intent activities and putting it into what drives high intent. So again, going to our whiteboard, Kevin, we've got up there all the different sources that you might be getting leads from as a business. So let's just say that you've got demo requests and your lead to close 1% might be 5%, gated content, maybe 0.8%, paid social lead gen, 0.4%, webinars, G2 events, they're all probably going to be one and under 1% as well. And then you can see that when you do that analysis, that clearly demo requests, people asking to talk to sales, they are much, much higher intent. And if you can also, Kevin, start to calculate how much you spent on pulling in the leads for each of those sources of conversion, we can start to get a number to show what it cost us per conversion point, which really starts to make it obvious to leadership what is working, what is helping drive the business forward, and what is just pumping up your lead number but having no real effect other than wasting sales' time and costing your business a whole lot of money.
When you get to this point, listeners, it's also great to call out that once you have these numbers in line, you can say, actually, demand generation, another benefit of doing demand generation is that it's the tide that lifts all boats. So all these different conversion rates of all these different channels that you're potentially getting leads from, they're probably all going to improve when you look at demand generation more closely, when you're focusing in on the channels that work better through demand generation led activities. It's likely that all these other activities, which you may or may not cull, if you don't cull them, they're probably going to improve in terms of performance over time.
Kev, I've just gone to our whiteboard where I've pulled up a pretty decent table put together by Cognizm, where they showed that you can go through each of these different lead sources and bucket them based on how well they've converted into low intent conversion points and high intent conversion points. Bucket them together and just show the statistics of what's our average customer value for low intent activities, like when we get leads from lead gen forms. On average, how much do we get from that customer versus people who submit a demo request on your website? Is there a difference in average customer value? And then pull that metrics all the way down the funnel. How many leads does it take us to win a deal? Is it 500 for our low intent channels or conversion points versus maybe 25 to get a deal for our high intent conversion points, like submit a demo request? What's our lead to SQO at ratio? What's our lead to close one ratio percentage? So we can really map all of that out and show leadership very clearly, hey, look, there's a set of activities that we're doing that really aren't moving the needle. And there's a set of activities that we're doing that really is moving the needle. And then what you'd suggest next, as Kevin said, is going to have so much more impact, because they can see now there's clearly a problem. The direction that they've given you is not working. It's not sustainable. It's not going to help you grow profitably. So you need to propose next, hey, demand generation is really going to help all of this. Demand generation is what drives those high intent leads. It's what drives more people to submit demo requests, to speak to sales. And when they do, they're much more ready to buy. You've built a relationship with them. They're educated on your product and its benefits. And that's why when you send these people to sales, so many of those deals close, or at least a lot more of those deals close more often than if they just came through a gated ebook that you had. Then the question is for leadership is what's next? And Kev, what's next?
What's next is you probably, as data geeks, we probably want to keep this table fairly dynamic and able to shift with how much budget we put in and how much activity we put in to each of these high intent versus low intent areas. So we can see what the overall blended result looks like when we actually propose shifting 20% of the budget over from low intent activities to high intent. What does that translate to for the bottom line? And really show that actually leads aren't the focus. We don't need that 500 low intent lead. We actually probably just need about 100 high intent leads. And so actually the work becomes easier for the same amount of budget that we're probably already investing. We can get a much greater return if we focus in on the high intent leads and the sort of activities that really drive those high intent leads. And so keeping this dynamic will probably help you down the line in adjusting your budgets and producing forecasts. But for the time being, once you've gotten to the step where you've got these numbers together, where you've answered that simple question of what does the revenue versus the cost actually look like for your leads, your marketing activities, the next step is to put this all together in a very clear and simple business case to leadership. So you're highlighting the key aspects of what we talked about already. How did you arrive at those numbers? How does that look when you adjust those different types of things like high intent activities, low intent activities? How did all these things adjust depending on the demand generation activities that you're proposing to put in and potentially what the costs would look like in those new scenarios? But try not to focus too much on the numbers. You don't have to try and get everything right the first time and have everything perfect and try and change everything overnight. The purpose of this exercise is to just present a very simple business case with a few numbers that shows clearly what you're talking about here and why you're proposing to take some of the budget away from the things that clearly aren't working and moving that budget towards launching a demand generation pilot or project that might actually shift the needle towards those high intention leads and ultimately towards a much more sustainable business model. Clear goals, clear ways to measure its success based on these kind of numbers. That's what you're trying to present at the end of the day in that business case to leadership.
And what you have to realize, listeners, is this needs to be a gradual shift. Leadership has hired a lot of the salespeople to try and service these leads that you're sending them. If all of a sudden this pipeline of leads that you're sending them are being turned off overnight, even if they're not effective, you've got a whole team of salespeople just twiddling their thumbs. There's less activity. That is not going to be a good feeling for leadership. Of course, ultimately, we want less leads, but more high intent leads, so sales are spending their time better. But that has to be a really gradual shift because that's an incredibly scary thing for a leadership team to completely change tact overnight based on something that the marketer has said. And so that's why we really advocate for doing this split the funnel exercise, looking at what exercises are you doing that clearly aren't driving things forward. Maybe there's a gated ebook play that you're spending 5% of your budget on or 10% of your budget on. If you can show clearly the leads that are coming from that and not having much an effect down the pipeline, you can ask. You can try and go, let's take that 5, 10% budget and let's put that into a pilot program for demand generation where we just focus on one segment in one product and then set very clear goals, very clear ways of measuring its success. So then have a review and go, okay, did this work or didn't it work?
That's a really good example, listeners. Try and focus in on the stuff that's really not efficient. It's an absolute no-brainer to shift that budget across to something that is worth testing, potentially could have a lot of upside, where the money before wasn't spent in something that was having any upside at all. And the idea is that we don't want to impact sales. We don't want to impact the business negatively We want to shift, as George said, gradually towards that demand gen led play. But at the same time, you're trying to maintain as much of the status quo and the good stuff in the status quo as possible. And remember, it's not static. As you start to invest more into demand generation, all the other bits of the system works better. So your low intent channels, some of them might actually start to improve in their performance and start to become high intent lead generation channels, because all this extra groundwork you're doing beforehand, talking to those people further up the funnel who are really not problem aware, will really help you get a better strike rate all the way across the line with all the different activities you're doing. And that means the sales team can actually scale over time. And instead of a team of 10 working on 500 leads each, maybe it's a team of 20 working on 100 leads each, but that's all they actually need to do, because they're actually getting a lot higher quality leads coming through, and they're able to generate a lot more revenue from fewer leads. And therefore, overall, you actually have more budget to invest in overall in your demand generation activities anyways. But it all starts with a simple shift in mindset, calling out something that potentially isn't working right now and shifting that towards something that might work. And over time, you do that for the next thing down and the next thing down. And before you know it, you'll be really driving a strong demand generation engine within your business.
Very good, Kevin. And listeners, once you're ready to start putting together a demand generation engine and a demand generation strategy for your business, that's what we have the B2B Incubator for. It's our program where you go through in 12 weeks, we give you the strategy, the templates, and the tools to build your demand gen engine from scratch. And it's all nicely documented so you can present it back to leadership. Okay, Kev, key takeaways from today. Can you run them through for us, please, Kevin?
Of course. Listeners, first, you need to make that business case to show that the status quo either isn't working financially for the business, or it's not scalable and soon won't be financially viable for the business. Second, use the exercises we showed you in this episode to make this business case and present it in clear terms to leadership as a very good way of presenting something that might actually benefit the business very quickly. And finally, present demand generation as a path forward, as a pilot project. It doesn't have to change everything overnight. In fact, you want to gradually shift over time, because that will give you the time and space to learn and to improve and really set your demand generation engine on good foundations.
Beautiful. Thank you, Kevin. Okay, listeners and viewers, you can find links to everything we discussed in the show notes. Make sure you check out this episode on YouTube. We put a lot of effort into our whiteboards these days. And Kevin and I are just so grateful that every week more and more marketers tune in every Monday to the B2B Playbook. If we can ask one thing, it would be to please pass the show on to someone who you think will get value from it. Also, again, make sure you check us out on YouTube. It's a huge help to us, and we'd really, really appreciate it. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, viewers. Thank you, Kevin. Take care and catch you next week.
Thank you, George. Thank you, listeners and viewers. Catch you all next week.
A quick note before you go, listeners, you can find more great content and get in touch with us at theb2bplaybook.com.
Be sure to subscribe to this podcast and our newsletter while you're there to get the latest news, tips, and resources from our playbook.
We'll be back the same day and same time with another episode next week.
Thanks for tuning in to the B2B Playbook. Remember, successful B2B marketing starts with the buyer.